in your soul so that it no longer has dominion over you in the way it once did. Oh, and you're supposed to cry. They didn't close me up right. I didn't cry. I was afraid. I felt like I was back on stage. Being famous in rehab isn't perhaps what you'd imagine. Everyone else there has a lot to deal with, so who cares if you're Matthew Perry? Later, in Pennsylvania, I attended a rehab with six other people who were all in their 70s, including Debbie, aka the bane of my existence. Debbie was the only other smoker, so I had to see Debbie all the time outside, and Debbie had zero memory. "Wait, have we met?" she said. "No, Debbie, we have not, but I was on the show Friends once, that's probably how you know me." "Oh, I like that show," Debbie would say. 5 minutes later, Debbie would pause, sucking on her cigarette, and turn to me. "So, did we go to high school together?" "No, Debbie," I'd say as kindly as I could muster. "You are 27 years older than me. You probably recognize me from the show Friends." "Oh, I like that show," Debbie would repeat, and the whole cycle would begin again. Chapter 9. Three's not company. Three ruins everything. When a man or a woman asks me to help them quit drinking, and I do so, watching as the light slowly comes back into their eyes, that's all God to me. And even though I have a relationship with God, and I'm so often grateful despite everything, I sometimes do want to tell God to go fuck himself for making my road so hard. When I'm clean and sober, it is as if a light has been shown to me, one that I can share with a desperate man who needs help with stopping drinking. It's the same light that hits the ocean in a bright sunlight, the beautiful gold water glistening. That's what God is to me. It also works at night when the moonlight hits the water. Boom! It almost knocks me over, because that five-year-old boy flying across the continent alone, seeing the city lights of Los Angeles, and he knows he's about to be parented. Well, it's all the same. Why is it so hard for me to stay sober when I see my fellows seemingly doing it easily? Why has my road been so racked with difficulty? Why have I wrestled so hard with life? Why has reality been an acquired taste, and why has it been so hard for me to acquire it? But when I help that one man get sober, or even help thousands get sober in a weekend or a retreat or a conference, all these questions get washed away. It's like I'm standing under a Hawaiian waterfall getting drenched by the beautiful warm water. That's where God is. You're just going to have to trust me on that. I am no saint. None of us are. But once you've been at death's door and you don't die, you would think you'd be bathed in relief and gratitude. But that isn't it at all. Instead, you look at the difficult road ahead of you to get better, and you are pissed. Something else happens, too. You are plagued by this nagging question. Why have I been spared? The other four people on the ECMO machine were still dead. There had to be a reason. Part of the answer for me was my 10,000 hours of experience in AA and helping people get sober. That lights me up. Loans me, in fact, a little bit of that golden light from my kitchen. But there has to be more, God. Why did you spare me? I'm ready. Give me the direction and I will follow it. When Woody Allen asked this very question to an alien in the movie Stardust Memories, the alien responds, "Tell funnier jokes." But that can't be it. Either way, I'm ready. And I seek the answer every day. I am a seeker. I seek God. My love life, however, is a different story. I had made more mistakes in my love life than Elizabeth Taylor. I'm a romantic, passionate person. I've longed for love. It's a yearning in me that I cannot fully explain. Once I reached my 40s, the rules had changed. I had done all the sleeping with people I'd ever need to do. I was looking for a partner now, a teammate, someone to share my life with. Also, I have always loved kids. I think it's because I was 10 years old when my sister Caitlin was born, then came Emily, then Will, and then finally Madeline. I loved playing with them, babysitting them, playing dumb games with them. There is no greater sound on the face of the planet than a child's laughter. So, by the time my 40s were in full swing, I truly wanted a girlfriend, someone I could count on, and who, in turn, could count on me. One night, some friends and I were out celebrating that yet again, I had achieved a year of sobriety. My still good friend, David Pressman, introduced me to his girlfriend's sister, Laura. We'd all gone to a Dodgers game together, but for me, there was no game, no stadium, no hot dog vendors. Instead, the world had receded to a beautiful face under a baseball cap. I tried to pull out the old Perry charm, anything to make her notice me, but she was too busy parading her glorious personality and wit to others. She was unimpressed that I'd been Chandler, and though she was perfectly pleasant to me, I sensed there was no there for her. As I drove home that night, I gave myself a speech. "Yes, you're disappointed, but not every girl is not going to like you, Maddie." I let it go, but I didn't forget her. Surely our paths would cross again. And they did. This time, the group had decided to play ping pong at the Standard Hotel in downtown L.A. Now, I am no Forrest Gump, but I knew my way around a ping pong table. In fact, if you've seen the finale of season 9 of Friends, you'll know that I'm at least good enough to beat Paul Rudd. I had heard that Laura might make an appearance, so I played ping pong with one eye on the door. And there she was, finally. It was as if she had been hurled into the club by a tornado. She was all energy and jokes. "Everyone in here should kill themselves," Laura said, and boom, like a brick of interest slamming into my face. But this time, I was ready. So began a night that resembled a knife fight, only with jokes. It turned out that the new object of my affection was a stand-up comedian and a successful writer in TV. It was clear from the get-go that we would never run out of things to say to each other. Our first date was on New Year's Eve. A friend was holding a pajama party, and I invited Laura to go with me. After that, our relationship developed slowly. She was careful, and I was willing to do whatever it took. But our affections deepened. It was all good. But nothing is all good in my world. Remember? Enter Rome. I was 2 years sober and thriving in AA, healthy, sponsoring people, writing a TV show. I was happy, even pretty muscular, dare I say. I've been hitting the gym and everything. I was asked to share my story at an AA meeting in West Hollywood, and you're not allowed to say no to an AA request. The room was packed, standing room only. I think word had gotten out that I was speaking. My story at the time had not reached the depths of the last few years. So, as well as detailing everything I'd gone through, I was able to get my share of laughs. At one point, I looked over to the kitchen area and noticed a woman pop her head through the window hatchy thing, leaning on her elbows to prop herself up. She resembled a gorgeous porcelain doll and was staggeringly beautiful. All of a sudden, there were only two people in the room. My AA share became directed only at Rome. It ended up being one of the greatest shares I'd ever given, because this epic beauty was so captivating and I wanted her to know everything about me. I wanted her to know everything. Afterwards, as we gathered outside for a cigarette, we started talking and flirting. "So, what are you up to right now?" she said. I'm going home to write. All of a sudden, I become a writer, I said. Well, Rome said, I make an excellent muse. I'll bet you do, I said, and then turned and walked away, completely bowled over by this mysterious person. On the way home, I gave myself a talking to. But what about Laura? Yes, of course, wonderful Laura, who I'm falling for more and more each day. But now there's Rome. What's a fella to do? Forget about Rome and continue investigating this Laura thing that is going so well? Right? That's what a normal person does under these circumstances. But Rome had cast a spell on me. Despite my positive self-talk, this was when I made a crucial killing mistake. I didn't know it was a mistake at the time. Do any of us know that we are making mistakes while we are making them? If we did, perhaps we wouldn't make them. The mistake was this, and it was a doozy. I began dating both women. This is not a move I recommend under any circumstances, but especially if you are me. I told myself that because I hadn't told either Laura or Rome that we were in a relationship, I was not being an asshole. But there was a little piece of me that knew I was doing something untoward because I cared about both of them, and despite outward appearances, I genuinely didn't want anyone to get hurt, including me. So, Laura and I would go to Kings games together, laugh, and have a wonderful time, though somewhat chaste. The courtship with both women went slowly, but eventually both removed their sex embargoes, and I was now fully involved with two different women at the same time. It was amazing and completely baffling and crazy-making. Did I mention that I had fallen madly in love with both of them? I didn't think it was even possible to do that. I even went online, read a few articles, and learned that this was something that did indeed happen. The feelings I had for both of these women were real, according to what I read. Then Laura and I pronounced ourselves boyfriend and girlfriend. Rome and I not so much, but I was still in trouble. What was I going to do? I enjoyed my time with both of them equally. I loved them. This went on for about 6 months before I came to my senses and decided I had to pick one. I had to stop this nonsense and pick one. Rome was passionate, erotic, funny, smart, but she also seemed to have this fascination with death that confused me. Laura talked about movies and lighter things. There was a sense of being home with her that I had not felt with Rome. I chose Laura. I made the very difficult call to Rome. At first, she was chill about it, until she wasn't. Subsequently, screaming at me for 2 hours in the parking lot of Barney's Beanery on Santa Monica Boulevard when I tried to make amends. You would be hard-pressed to find an angrier person than she was with me that day. But by now, you know me. You know I can't do with getting closer and closer to someone. And that was what was happening with Laura. The fear was burrowing into me. To break up with Laura would be insane. She had it all. We had it all. We were each other's best friend. But the intimacy was scaring me. I knew once again that if she got to know me any better, she would see what I already believed about myself. As ever, I wasn't enough, I didn't matter. Soon she would see this for herself, and she would leave me, and that would annihilate me, and I would never recover. There was another option. I could remain in the relationship, but turn back to drugs and try to maintain a low habit. This would protect me from the fear, allow me to drop my walls, and become even more intimate with her. Turning to drugs has led to nothing but chaos for me, and yet, inconceivably, I chose to do it one more time to deal with the Laura situation. I started taking one pill a day just in order to stay in the relationship. It worked out great at first, But as is the way with drugs, they always win. 6 months later, we had a shitstorm on our hands. I was a mess. Laura broke up with me. I had to go back on Suboxone once again and check into a sober living house. I was afraid I was going to die yet again. Rome was still yelling at me every chance she had, and Laura was hurt and worried. Oh, and gone. Oh, there was something else the magazine said about being in love with two women at the same time. It always had the same ending. You lose them both. So, there I was, living in a Malibu sober living house on 8 milligrams of Suboxone. Though it's a solid detox drug, the best, as I've said over and over, it's the hardest drug on the planet to get off. In fact, it made me suicidal to come off it. That's not quite accurate. I had suicidal feelings, but I also knew it was just the medicine. So I wasn't actually suicidal, if you follow. All I had to do was stave off the days when I felt suicidal, not do anything about it, and know that at some point I would feel better and not want to kill myself anymore. To get off Suboxone, you have to drop a milligram a week until you get to zero. Doing so makes you feel insanely sick for 2 days. Then you get used to the new level, in this case, 7 milligrams. And once you stabilize, then you drop again. The suicidal feelings don't start till you get down to 2 milligrams. So, at 2 milligrams, I did probably the most selfish thing I've ever done in my life. I was terrified about how I was going to feel, and I didn't want to go through it alone. Accordingly, I purchased $300 worth of flowers, drove to Laura's house and begged her to take me back. We sat on her couch in her living room and discussed the ins and outs of what this would mean. Driven completely by fear, I told her I wanted to marry her, possibly even have a child with her. And then something impossible happened. As we were sitting there, I heard a key slowly turning in her front door, and in walked Rome. In walked who now? How is it possible that these two women were standing in the same room? I would give anything to have a time machine, go back to that moment and say, how about a threesome? But this was no time for jokes. My jaw was on the floor. I'm going to go water the plants, Rome said. She headed up the back stairwell and was gone. I think I need to take care of her, Laura said, and left me in the living room. When I realized she wasn't coming back, I took my 2 milligram addiction back to Malibu. It turned out that Rome and Laura had met at an AA meeting, realized who they were, and became fast friends. The bulk of their conversations, as I'm sure you can imagine, were about what an asshole I was. As for me, I couldn't stay in Los Angeles. So, I hopped on a private plane to a Colorado recovery center where they said that they thought they could get me off Suboxone without making me feel suicidal. Well, so much for that idea. I felt suicidal for 36 days in a row, and then flew to New York and appeared on Letterman, trying to hide that I was being held up with tape and paper. Somehow, I pulled it off. 7 years later, after I learned a whole lot about myself, I made real amends to Rome and to Laura, and they both accepted my apology. Believe it or not, the three of us are friends now. Laura is married to a lovely guy named Jordan, and Rome is living with an equally lovely guy named Eric. Recently, the five of us had dinner together at my place, and we all had a lovely time. Then, at around 10 p.m., the two couples left in their respective cars. I heard the engines recede down the canyon toward the city. Out back, as I waited for something to come to me, anything that might make things better, instead, I once again heard the sound of the coyotes. No, it's the sound of me, alone, fending off the demons for one more night. They'd won. and I knew I'd lost as I headed back to my lonely bedroom to fend off those demons and negotiate sleep one more time. Interlude, Violence in Hollywood. I'm not a violent man, but I have been both the victim and the perpetrator of violence one time each